And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 670. Got to recap your week 7 fab, talk about some April standouts, and probably much, much more. A lot of listener questions. You guys crushing it already on that one. So we'll get to all that and more. But first off, you can follow me on Twitter at BDendrick. And my guest slash co-host for this week, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Ted, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. Glad to be on again. Had to do a little pinch hitting work for Mike, but that's all right. Glad to be here anyway.
Yeah, glad to have you here, as always. It's good to have your thought process through Fab and everything, because it was a wild week in Fab. Very, very wild
week
in Fab.
Yes, it was.
Between injuries and call-ups, and my goodness, Christian Scott better be good for a lot of people. That's all I'm going to say, but we'll talk about all that here. Oh, he's pointing to himself if you're watching the video, folks. So that'll be a fun conversation right there. But we'll get to the Fab as usual here in a little bit. But let's have a little fun with this. First off, I'll just ask you for fun. We're just a little over a month into the season, just kind of like a month and a week or two, give or take. How are things going for you in the fantasy streets? Because with all the injuries and just chaos of galore, it's been a roller coaster ride for many.
Yeah, it's been pretty good so far. I can't complain too much. I had one point where all eight of my NFBC teams were in single digits in the standings. So that was good. That was a high point. I have a couple teams in first right now, but one's at DC that's getting hit by injuries really hard. Before spring training barely started, it had injuries pitching front. So I was trying to survive that. The main event's going all right. Got one that's doing really well. The other two, I need the bats to liven up a little bit. And then, I think it's weird. I have a lot of speed in places I didn't really think I would have a lot of speed. I made a point, especially in draft and holds, to draft like those middle infielders in the 300s, 400s that were like Bryce Terang, and there's others too, like Jackson Merrill's one, Mason Wynn. So I have all these steals now, and I can't do anything about it in a DC, but it's all right. It's a weird thing to have. It's a weird experience, because I'm usually short in speed in DCs anyway, so it's just a little different this year.
Yeah, it's been wild. Like, the OCs are going well. The DCs, it's like a couple are going good, a couple are all over the place. I was setting some lineups on Monday, as we're recording on Monday as usual. And it's almost gotten to the point already where it's pretty simple to set my lineups because of all the injured people on the roster, which is rough. But there's one, it's interesting because, like, I know I've talked about it many times on different shows in the preseason. Like, my strategy is I'll get a bunch of pitchers, but my late, 10 to 15 picks, I'll go and get a bunch of relief pitchers. That's like always my target on like long shot saves and whatnot. And there's one league, I think I'm starting five closers right now. It's pretty wild, because I've lucked in. Like, I had Ginkle going for a bit. I had a couple, like I have Hector Neris going in one. And MacArthur in every league I could find. So just something like that, where there's all these guys sitting out there where I might lead the world in saves, but it's going to be tough to get some other things taken care of. So DCs are a fun, fickle beast. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I have one where I'm going to see all back. So I went from having one closer to now two, hopefully. And then the other one, I have four relievers pitching, because it's the one that had all the injuries. Like, I have Giolito, Senga. Merrill Kelly's on that team too. So yeah, a lot of my like foundation starters are hurt. So I got to get creative.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We got a lot of people coming back this week, which is good. Seawald's coming back. Steele's coming back. Montas is coming back. Garrett's supposed to come back. Like, there's a long list of people. I probably missed if Pivetta might be coming back this week. There's a long list. So we'll see how drops get made next week. Because, does Ginkle get dropped now? In certain formats, probably in deeper formats, you might wait and see. Like, I was telling people, let's wait and see if Seawald actually gets activated and actually looks okay out the gate, because he was close last time when they got sidelined for a few more weeks. So just hold the horses on that one. Evan Phillips just went out, so we'll talk Daniel Hudson later. He'll be a popular name, and much, much more. But we're just going to do a little fun exercise, going on Fangraphs, looking at leaderboards, and we're talking some hitters, might get some pitchers, just kind of like surprises in April that kind of stood out. Because, like, we're not going to talk Mookie Betts, we're not going to talk these guys because they're pretty cut and dry. But we were talking before the show, and when it came to hitters, we decided to use WRC plus, kind of an all encompassing fantasy stat. The average is if you're 100, you're an average player, basically, WRC plus. So just for, Shohei Ohtani's number one this year, he's tied with Marcelo Ozuna in April with a 210 WRC plus. They're that much better than the rest of the field. So it's something to keep in mind there. But we're just going to pick and choose a few here. And one of the first one that stood out to, I think, both of us out the gate here, the third best WRC plus in April was Alec Bohm. Ben, Alec hit 370 in April with four home runs, 28 RBIs, one stolen base, and showed some good plate discipline. When we dig into Bohm's profile, is there anything that stands out to you? And are we kind of like, most of these guys probably won't live up to these standards, but are we like on board for a pretty good season type idea when it comes to like a guy like Alec Bohm?
Yeah, I kind of missed out on Alec Bohm this year. So seeing his stats, I'm kind of upset. And then I went to his Baseball Savant page, and it's all red. So it makes sense that he's doing this well. It's not a fluke at all. He's earning those numbers. I think he hits more like fifth or sixth. I don't know if he may have moved up the way he's hitting in the Phillies lineup.
He's hitting Bohm, fourth a lot now.
Is he fourth now? Okay, yeah. They don't have a traditional lineup, it feels like, sometimes with the way they roll things out. But, yeah, he's just crushing it. Like, he was going in the late 100s probably in drafts, maybe even fell a little bit in March. But the one thing I see, though, that – so you mentioned his 370 average. He's got a 413 BABIP, so that'll come down. His expected average is 318, though. So, I mean, he's – and that's very high. That's 96th percentile. So, yeah, I mean, as long as Bohm keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to be pretty valuable. You'd like to see a little more alignment with the runs and RBI. I think he's doubled his run total, which is fine, but those imbalances can get kind of tricky if you don't plan for them. And, yeah, I mean, good for you if anyone listening drafted Bohm.
Yeah, 18-game hitting streak as he entered Monday. 0-for-4 as they're headed into the eighth, so I'm not sure if he'll – a hitting streak will continue on, but a great start to the season for Bohm, as you were saying. Like you said, the X stats, just everything in general points to tons of success. Like, we expect regression, but still, like you mentioned, 318 X batting average, 506 X slug, 387 X will, but are all really solid things. The 8.7% barrel rate, second best of his career. The hard hit rate's awesome. His max EV at 110.8 ties for the second best in his career. So things are looking very good there. And it was one thing, I'm guilty of it, because I was kind of like, yeah, no. Like, I'm thinking there's not enough power. He had 20 home runs last year, 97 RBIs, hit 274. That's a good stat line, like where he was getting drafted. There are other players I was interested in, or like, you could even wait like on a Mikel Garcia or stuff like that, where we were discussing the point. You know, he's already got the 32 RBIs on the season total. We talked just April at 28, which is outstanding. And this Phillies offense is a juggernaut. Like, he could be putting up one of those RBI counts we're gonna look back on and go, wow, like, where did that come from? It's gonna feel like the Jonah Heim version of the position, where Heim drove in almost 100 RBIs at catcher out of like nowhere, and everyone kept saying it's unsustainable, and he's kind of doing pretty good again this year, like, not quite to that level, but good. Now Alec Bohm's kind of pulling that same stunt off, is the best way I'll say it. It's pretty impressive.
The other thing I'll point out real quick before we move on is, so he's seeing the ball like excellently. So his walk rate is 12.9% in April. His K rate's 14.7. So they're off by less than 2 percentage points. That's better than Otani and Ozuna, who he's behind. Like, that's really good. That's a very good sign.
That's outstanding. Yeah, it's a very good point there. He's locked in, as one would say. And
yep.
It's the ninth inning now, so his hitting streak will get snapped, but I think he'll take it, as the Phillies are going to continue. Like, they're going to be 19-3, I think, in their last 22 or something. It's rough in the streets, folks. The fourth player behind Bohm, we're not going to discuss here. I just want to throw him out as a hat tip to catchers, is Ryan Jeffers. He's the fourth best. Actually, Salvi's sixth, and William Contreras is eighth. So three of the top eight are all catchers. Just had to throw that out there real quick. But Ryan Jeffers is one I'm a big fan of, have a lot of shares of. But we're going to go down to – I don't think we need to talk about him, but I was going to point it out. If you have anything to add on this, you're more than welcome to. But the 11th best player is Mike Tauchman when it comes to WRC+. Not someone that a lot of people think of, like, you know, three homers, 16 runs, 10 RBIs, a stolen base, 315 average, though. I have a hunch if we did this in May, we might not see this name up here. But does Mike Tauchman interest you at all?
He's getting towards the end of his rope, I think, because he's there because of Seiya's out and Cody's out. I'm benefiting from Tauchman. I have him in, I think, one DC, so I've been playing in the last couple weeks. It's been nice. I think I drafted him when he was still their projected center fielder for the Cubs. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't get too excited about Tauchman going forward, unless there's a setback Hopefully it doesn't happen though with either Seiya or Cody. But yeah, he's definitely filled in great for them. And this is why the Yankees went after him. So he's been he's kind of bounced around. So I think he came up with the Rockies, then he went to the Yankees and the Giants, Tauchman, and he always had potential. And now we're kind of seeing it in the short small sample. Only 87 plate appearances because he didn't really start out playing in the beginning of the month. But yeah, he's performed when he's been in there. So it's impressive that he's up this high on the list.
Yeah, Suzuki and Bellinger out helps, like you said. They're supposed to maybe start a rehab assignment here very soon. So that could change. And usually, so the Tauchman would only play versus right-handed pitchers. It also helps the Cubs have faced a lot of righties lately. So he's been getting a ton of at-bats, and he's taking advantage of them. So pretty good stuff there. The next guy I want to talk about, number 14th in WRC Plus in April, was Riley Green. This guy is mashing 280, 6 homers, 22 runs, 14 RBIs, 19% walk rate with a 24.1% K rate. He's just hitting everything well, it feels like, and it keeps getting better as the month went on. He has 8 homers on the whole season, if you really want to get crazy with it. But what are you seeing in Riley Green? Because I will raise my hand first saying, I was worried, was the shoulder fully healed? What are we going to do this year? And he has come out guns blazing in April, especially when the Tigers team as a whole has kind of let us down when it comes to fantasy outside of a couple players. But Riley Green has taken off in a big way.
He's still only 23, which is kind of crazy. He's been up for a couple of years now, and he got called up so early that we forget how young he is. And it looks like he's kind of set off for power. So I have a Savant up. His worst sliders are the whiff percentage, K percentage. They're like 30th percentile in the league. And because of that, his XBA is 258 Riley's, but everything else is like 90s or 80s for the most part in terms of percentile. So he's kind of feels like he's selling off for some power, which is nice. And I'm a little upset because he was someone when Steamer first came out way back in January, or I mean, it was out before then, but when I started looking, that I really liked at where he was kind of going as a breakout. He had good stat cast last year, even though he was hurt. You mentioned the shoulder injury. And I think once the other projection systems came out, they were more down on Green than Steamer. And usually Steamer's more optimistic when it comes to hitters. So, I mean, that made sense. But I only drafted him on my first DC, and I wish I had him on more teams because I really liked him when I first started looking at that stuff. And, I mean, it's good that I have him. But, yeah, I know, like, Chris Towers loved Green. He had him ranked super high. The one thing that's a little upsetting, I was hoping for more speed. He doesn't have a steal yet, and his sprint speed's only 54th percentile Green's. But, I mean, he's young enough. Maybe he's just, I don't know, loafing around. He's hitting too many homers, so that's why he's not sprinting as much.
It's tough to steal bases when you're just trotting around them.
Yeah, so I'm happy to see him performing. It's good that I was kind of right on him so far. I just didn't. It's one of those guys where you just didn't cash in with what you were thinking, I guess. So it happens.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where this keeps going as we continue to watch Green this season, because 18.3% barrel rate on the season. His high was last year at 11.3. That's quite the jump. But he's got his worst hard hit rate in his 3 years at 42.7. Again, it's only 1 month essentially. But the fact he's barreling the ball more, hitting it hard just a little less than usual. And the X stats say what he's doing is pretty much in line. Like his slug and his X slug are the same. Woba and X Woba drop maybe a point. Tech, it's not a ton. There's a lot to like in the profile, like you're saying, with Riley Green. And one thing that stands out is you said he's selling out for power. Yeah, his ground ball rate's down 6%. His fly ball rate's up almost 10%. And that's led to a 12% home run to fly ball increase. So he's just making it work right now. The question is, how sustainable will that be as the season goes on? Because it's, it'll be tricky to continue that kind of home run to fly ball rate, especially in that ballpark like we always talk about. It makes it even more impressive what's taking place there with Riley Green.
And real quick, he turned into Barry Bonds. He has a 19% walk rate, which
that's impressive.
Points leagues, stuff. He's crushing it even more so.
Yeah, it's a good point. Very, very good point. Here's what I want to mention, because I've gotten heckled a few times for recommending Jurickson Profar in articles and podcasts and whatnot. Is I was sitting there going, look, he's playing every day. He's hitting like 6. He's driving at a ton of runs. A little bit of pop. It's gotten even better for Jurickson Profar in the month of April. Profar is the 15th rated WRC plus with 172, actually tied with Riley Green and Ellie De La Cruz on this list. Profar hit 322 in April with 4 homers, 15 runs, 17 RBIs, only a 15.2% strikeout rate. What are you noticing when you look at a guy like Jurickson Profar? Because his production has been so good of late. he has either been hitting, was it third, fourth, or fifth a lot, and he went through a stretch leading off. Like, the dude, they're putting Profar in some very high leverage situations.
Kind of the same theme with the other guys you mentioned. It's the plate discipline. So Profar has a 17% K percentage in April and a 12.5% walk percentage. So those are both excellent numbers when you put them together. And the one thing, though, with Profar, like, he's never been a big power guy. So his barrel rate's subpar so far year to date, 37 percentile. But another page with a lot of red. It's really just the barrel percentage is kind of low and the sprint speed is not going to steal too much, even though he has two steals already, Profar. But yeah, I feel like he always gets one of these hot streaks every year, and who knows how long it's going to last. But yeah, if he's going to hit in the top of the lineup, he's going to be valuable in most formats, maybe not 10 teamers because the pop might not be there, but definitely 15s or like an NFBC 12 where you're rostering 300 plus players.
Yeah, most definitely. A name that many fantasy players find boring is Josh Smith. And I just want to bring him up because, yeah, I can see the appeal. He's 17th in WRC Plus at 167 in April, which is great. Two home runs in April, 14 runs, 14 RBIs. You know, the power two homers, you hope for more, no steals. So it's pretty much hits for a really good average, brings in some runs and RBIs. That's great. Good plate discipline and whatnot. When you see a profile like Josh Smith, Ben, and if you're doing fantasy, he plays at like three different positions, which is huge. What are you like thinking when you see Josh Smith? Because I've heard some very smart people thinking he's kind of just a waste, and I think he's just boring, good production in hard categories. Not to mention, third base got destroyed by injuries, which made it very intriguing. So what are you seeing there?
He's a great guy to have at the back of your bench, like you mentioned, with the three position eligibility, just to plug in if you need someone. Like when Friday lineups are set, or even though, like, if you have a daily league where you need someone to fill in every day, he's perfect for that. Smith is, he's also being helped out by the injuries. So he's playing because Josh Young is injured still. But we still have a couple weeks till Young's supposed to be back. So I think Smith may have a few more weeks of relevancy. And he's playing in the strong side platoon over Duran. And I think there's another injury that may have pushed Duran. Oh, no, Langford. So Langford went on the IL. So that means more at-bats for Duran and Smith. So that's good. There's just not much power there. Smith has two homers and like 100 at-bats. And with a pretty poor barrel rate, 3.9%, I mean, I don't see much power from Smith, but he's pretty fast. So he's just like one of those good roto guys to have on the back of your bench.
Yep, that's kind of where I'm at. He's filling a gap until I either get Royce Lewis or Josh Young back in my team, basically. Just play third base long enough for me is all I'm looking for. Last hitter I'm going to mention, and then I'll flip over to the pitchers for a few here. We kind of mentioned his name before the show, but Alex Verdugo, during draft season, he gets pooped on a lot. It's the best way I could say it, being politically correct. They're like, he's boring, he doesn't do this, like all these things. But he's found his zone, it feels like, so far this season. In April, hit 279 with four home runs, 16 runs, 12 RBIs, and a stolen base. 13.6% walk rate with a 7.8% strikeout rate. That is impressive for a 150 WRC+. But for me, I was always worried about Verdugo's power, per se. And at least in April, we saw a decent amount of it. So what are your thoughts when you look into Alex Verdugo's profile?
Yeah, he is more blue than the other guys that we've been talking about so far on StatCast. His exit velocity is only 86 miles per hour on average, 3.8% barrel rate, so on par with Josh Smith. Verdugo, like, but you mentioned that, like, his plate discipline has been terrific. He's not very fast, only one steal, but I think he just fits well with the Yankees. I was pretty happy when they traded for him, and he hasn't hit leadoff like I was thinking he could potentially. I mean, with the walk rate, he kind of deserves to hit at the top of the order. He has a 353 on base for the year. But I mean, just what he's done for the team, like, he's made them more like they're more light now. Like, they have more fun. He had the dog thing going on. I mean, I remember I was at the game a couple weeks ago, and during like a pitching change or something, like, he and Soto were trying to like pump up right field, left field, just to like get them going. And like, they were throwing balls at the different outfield sections. So it was fun to see, like, for once with something like that with the Yankees, which you don't normally see with them. But yeah, I mean, in terms of fantasy though, like, I have him on one DC just because I needed like an outfielder at that point in the draft, and he fell. He's definitely not someone you want in the shallow league. There's just not the upside. I mean, like, but if he ever did hit leadoff, I don't think that's going to happen though. I think Volpe's kind of stuck there, and Glaber will hit like fifth, fourth. They have Stan hitting there. So Verdugo's kind of stuck in the bottom of the order right now. But it's definitely just like more, I think it's like a hot streak. A lot of his placement here is because of the slugging and the on base, which you're not going to get much of in fantasy, because I don't think the slugging will be supported by homers. It'll probably be more doubles based and maybe some triples. But I mean, he's definitely had a great real life start to the season. And that's kind of what the WRC Plus is saying right now. But fantasy, I mean, he could be like a streamer if they have a good matchup with like four righties Monday through Thursday. But in a shallow league, I wouldn't get too excited to add Verdugo.
Excellent. That's kind of what I wanted to bring about, because on paper, he had a pretty good hot streak there for a bit, and he's hitting like cleanup for the Yanks. Like, it's the perfect storm. If he hits well, the big production will follow. But if he scuffles, it's like the rest of the lineup for the most part, it'll get ugly real quick. So, yeah, time will tell on that one. Let's flip to the pitching side of things as usual. And we were talking before the show. I said, what stat would you like to use, Ben? And he said, let's use the Bubba and the Bloom staple. And that is going to be K to walk percentage. So that makes a ton of sense. We'll go to that. For those that don't know, we usually prefer K to walk percentage because it shows the ability to throw a bunch of strikes and get outs and not walk so many guys. It's a great combination of things. And usually, knock on wood, leads to success. So it's really fitting that the number one person in April at K to walk of 30.6% is Jack Flaherty. He also did it with a 4 ERA to 2.23 Sierra. So things maybe could have been even better for Captain Jack if you really want to look at it. I keep joking about it on shows, if it's first pitch pot or whatever, that Jack Flaherty is coming off the revenge start of all revenge starts against St. Louis, where he was just mowing everybody down. He has a start on Monday night, actually, so I'm really curious to see. Or maybe he got moved to Tuesday. I can't remember. See how that one plays out. But what's your thoughts when you're looking at Flaherty? Because Ryan was huge on him in the preseason. He converted me through our discussions, and I started to see where he's coming from. I still did not expect this by any means, but he had a heck of a month of April.
He sure did. And the reason for the high ERA is because his BABIP was 343, so that's kind of elevated. And his left on base was only 61.2%, so that's very low. It's about at least 10 percentage points lower than the average. So that explains the bump in ERA. And the homer rate is fine. It's not like he's getting up homers either. So, yeah, he's just been – he's pitching like 2019, 2018 Jack Flaherty, which is nice to see. I don't have him anywhere. I didn't foresee this. I should listen to Ryan, I guess. Give Ryan credit for that one. But I think he said he didn't have him as many spots as he was hoping to, which is unfortunate, like with me and Riley Green. Two Tigers, maybe it's a Tigers thing. But, yeah, I mean, great. He's ahead of Glass now. He's first. It's pretty unbelievable. He's at the top of this list.
Yep. It's insane. Like, there's Jared Jones, there's Tariq Skubal, guys you'd expect there. I want to bring up Garrett Crochet because, like, kind of how I mentioned with Flaherty, you see the ERA, but the Sierra. Crochet is a guy I've written up and talked about a lot lately because he's got the 26.8% K to walk. People see the 5.31 ERA, and that's just ballooned. He has a 2.63 Sierra in the month of April, which is outstanding. What's your thoughts when you look at Garrett Crochet? Because it's pretty much been one, maybe two starts that have pretty much ruined the stat line. Because other than that, he's been very, very serviceable.
Yeah, so it's been a homer problem. He has an 18% homer to fly ball rate for the year. But then looking at the leaderboard in April, he had a 2.2 homer per nine rate. 2.20, not homers per nine, which is very high. And that's shown by his FIP of 4.76. But then his xFIP, Crochet's is 3.09. So when you normalize out the home run rate, it's more in line with a 3 ERA, which matches up with the Sierra 2.83. So he's just been unlucky. On top of that, in April, his left on base rate was 51.6%. So those homers were driving in everybody, I think. And that ballooned the ERA. So I guess I would say if someone dropped Crochet, I think he actually was dropped in my keeper league today. So that caught my attention. I definitely try to scoop him up, but it's like when we started out in March and in the off season that he's not going to pitch for very long, probably, because he's barely pitched in his career. And I mean, the homers could be an actual problem because of where he pitches. Chicago is a homer friendly stadium, so it probably won't be 2.2 per nine bad all year as long as he's pitching, but it could be like 1.5. So it could be an issue where he's underperforming his expected metrics because of that.
Yep, I'm with you. Like, I'm riding it to the wheels fall off type thing when it comes to Crochet. Very well aware that he's not going to probably. I don't expect much after the All-Star break, to be honest. I think he's going to put it because they're letting him go like six innings. They're not babying him a ton. Except it is. I was watching, I think it was last Monday, he was starting, and they were kind of talking about it. It's like, and I'll just pull it up right here because you could probably see it on his game logs. It's like one regular start and then one they hold back. One regular and then one they hold back. And you can kind of see that with, well, it was 6, 7, 4 2/3. I think it's more of a pitch count thing. Let me figure this out real quick. And I give you the right answers here. Where did the pitch count go? I can't find it now. So never mind. There it is. There it is. So he goes 87, 93, then 77. There was 92, 75, 87, 77, 88. So I bet you his next start, he's in the 75 to 78 range of pitches. So something to keep an eye on. Like, they'll let him go close to 90 and one and then back to like 75. It seems like that's kind of where they're going with him. So that's another thing to think about when you're starting Garrett Crochet from a week to week basis. You might get kind of, you know, let down a little bit per se. All right. And also for those that are new to K-Dub walk percentage, you want to be above 20% for the most part. That's where we start to think you're really elite and special. And in the month of April, there was 23 pitchers above 20%. So it's not as easy as it looks. I want to hit on number 12 right here because Ranger Suarez had an amazing April, like ridiculous April, 23.4% K-Dub walk, 1.72 ERA, a 2.6 Sierra. The dude was just lights out, Ben. When you take a peek at Ranger Suarez, what stands out to you? Like, are we believing this? Are we concerned with this? What are your thoughts? Because it's been pretty, pretty good.
Yeah, it's some good, some bad. I mean, so his K rate is 26%, 3.2 walk percentage. That's how you get the 23% K minus walk percentage. But Suarez's BABIP against his 186 and his left on base percentage is 99%. That's incredible for a month, but it's not going to last. He's going to face the Braves. He's going to get torched one start there probably. Suarez was someone that Phil Dussault was high on, which I still want to know what Phil saw in his profile. I mean, so far it's paid off, but I mean, he's gotten extremely like as lucky as possible. And his homer per nine is 0.5. So usually you're around one for the most part, at least. If you could flip Suarez in a trading league, I would definitely try to do that. See if you could sell high on this prolonged success he's had, but just get ready for a rough start or two coming up at some point.
I wouldn't be shocked to see a rough start or two. I have a lot of shares of him, especially in Gladiators and stuff, because he was like basically an end game pick and finished the year strong with injury. I was hoping for maybe a bounce back from a few years ago. Did I expect this? No, I'll be honest, but I figured a serviceable pitcher I could take with one of my last starting pitcher things. I'm cool with that. It's turned out a lot better. So we'll see where that one lands here in a bit. Zach Lytle, he's 14th on this list right behind, 14th. It goes Ranger Suarez, Freddie Peralta, Zach Lytle. 22.6% K to walk in April for Zach. 3 ERA, 3.11 Sierra. That's pretty fair. I can see pros and cons with that. He's been going 6 innings in 3 straight starts, so he's not getting, you know, the baby treatment in Tampa. He's got 6 or more Ks in 4 straight starts. There's a lot to like with Zach, but is there anything maybe we should be concerned with, or what are your thoughts on Zach Lytle?
No, so he's on the other end of the spectrum when it comes to what Ranger Suarez is experiencing. So Lytle's BABIP is 393, so that's going to come down, hopefully, at some point. That's why his WHIP's 1.44 and his ERA is 4. So he's gotten unlucky in the ways that Suarez has gotten lucky. Lytle's walk rate is 1/9, 2.5%. So that's all pitcher controlled. So that's fantastic. I mean, if he can sustain that, that's awesome. That's going to help him throughout the rest of the season. And just be patient. Like if he was dropped, I could see him being dropped in a 12 teamer. I would definitely pick up Lytle and see if he can get some good luck going his way.
Yeah, I do like him quite a bit. So that is a fun one. Last one, there's some interesting ones. I got Tyner Houck. You have Ryan Pepiot. Dylan Cease is number 17. You want to talk about some interesting stuff there. Kikuchi, Gilbert, my boy Mackenzie Gore. Anybody that stands out to you there you'd like to discuss real quick? Or not?
Surprised to see Eric Fetty's on here. Your boy Brandon Alphabet is there.
Brandon Alphabet is definitely there. 22nd on the list, 20.7% K to walk, baby.
Yep. He's had some unluck. He's been unlucky too, 59.3% left on base percentage. So A lot of guys are scoring when they get on, which should turn around for him. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not a lot of the guys who are pitching well so far, but I mean, Bybee's even on here, which is kind of surprising, but because I feel like he's been actually his numbers are pretty good in April, but I think maybe he's gotten beat up lately.
It's a roller coaster. It's all or nothing for him. He got beat up in his last start, pitched great for like a start or two. It's you don't know what to expect with Bybee.
Yeah, so I think the worst ERAs that we mentioned, actually, most of the guys we pointed out had the worst ERAs. Flaherty, Crochet, Fott, Kyle Harrison's on there.
Yeah.
His is 4.3. So he's kind of a high BABIP, so that's probably why he's been a little unlucky. But, yeah, no, I think we covered the good ones.
We covered the good ones. There's a name on here we will talk about later in a listener question, so I'll save that for there because I don't like Aaron Civale at all, but we'll talk about him later in the show. But let's talk about the most popular ads and drops of the week. And it, like kind of hinted at earlier, it was a wild one, Ben. It was a wild one. I'm already looking forward to hearing what we did this week. But as usual, for the maybe new listeners here, we talk 12-team OCs and NPC. Kind of gives the middle ground, so it's not all 15 base. There's more names to talk about and gives even people that play 10s and 12s on, say, Yahoo, ESPN, CBS. These guys might still be available for you. So here's our thoughts on them. So go check them out. The most added player in OCs this past week in 222 OCs with a high of 542, over half of your budget, a min of 69, which is quite nice. No one, though, was one Christian Scott of the New York Mets. And it's been a while, Ben, since we've got a big-time pitching prospect get called up. We got a ton last year. There's not as many of them this year, so that's kind of part of the deal. Scott went out and dealt against Tampa Bay, 6 2/3, one earned, six Ks, which was great. And he's been dynamite this season through five starts at AAA, 3.20 ERA in 25 and a third innings with 36 strikeouts. So you said you were in on him. What are your thoughts on Christian Scott? What made you excited to go all in on Christian Scott?
Well, the Mets rotation is horrible.
That's true.
So, and I think they kind of want to be competitive. They, after an awful start, they won a few games. I think they're around 500 now. So that's a positive for them wanting to compete. And like you mentioned, all the numbers and and we can get into this at some point, but I think you kind of mentioned about the prospects are kind of depleted, at least in terms of pitchers, I think, in the minors right now, because so many got called up last year. I think a lot of the other top prospects are in like A or double A, or they're not much older than 20. And Scott was in AAA this year, so he was at the cusp of being called up. He's 24. He hasn't hit 100 innings in the minors. His career high is 87.2. But I mean, if that progresses to like 130, maybe 150, if you account for the AAA innings, that's kind of like what Bryce Miller did last year. And he was, Scott may have went for more than Miller. I know Waxman has it in his report. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, though. But he's like a game-changing fab ad, I think. And I'm always of the mindset where I'd rather fab a rookie pitcher than a rookie hitter. So that's why I was excited to go after Scott this week.
Okay, I do not disagree with any of that. My question for you, real quick, is are you going to start him versus Atlanta this week?
I did. I think we actually have a listener question about that, or a listener comment, so we'll touch on that again. But my plan was to sit him because I knew he was getting Atlanta before Fab ran, but I don't know. It's not because I paid so much for Scott. It's more that my other option was like Carlos Rodon against the Astros. So I figured take that up, and the Braves have been struggling against righties lately, actually. So I took that into account as well. And I don't know. It's in New York. So I think listening to the RotoWire pod from last night, Jeff and Scott were saying they would start him, Scott. But in those comments, Paul Spore said he would sit Scott. So everyone's up in the air about that start. It's definitely a rough decision you have to make right off the bat. But I'm gonna roll him out there and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a tough one. I think I would sit him. I didn't get any shares of him, so I can't say a whole lot. Like, my concern was, even like on the RotoWire charts, is Tyler McGill is supposed to come back the following week. So does McGill take Scott's spot in the rotation? Does Scott take someone else's spot in the rotation? That's where my question came into play. Like, whose spot does he take when Tyler McGill comes back?
Maybe Jose Budo's.
That wouldn't. That's fair. That's the only logical one. Yeah.
He's kind of like the guy that shuttles up and down. At least that's what he did last year.
Okay. That was.
I mean, that's me hoping.
Yeah, that's just my biggest concern. Like, I'm not rooting for this to happen, but I'm so terrified that for everyone that spent money, he's going to get sent back to AAA next week when Tyler McGill gets back, and then all hell breaks loose. I don't think that's going to happen, but
McGill is terrible though too, and he like that. I agree. That 2020 or what 2022, whatever that April was, like that's gone. He was throwing so hard, and I think he blew out his shoulder.
You know, in the grand scheme of things, we got like Manaea, Quintana, Severino. They are what they are, but you almost want to just go six man with this team if you really really want to. That could, and then it also helps Scott get to the finish line. So that's that could be something. We'll see. Like, I think he's good enough. He should stick. But I kept looking at different scenarios where the Mets would never surprise me with stuff like this. And it'd be very disappointing. Tyler Black. We talked about prospects, folks. We got a few up top here. Tyler Black added in 207 leagues, as high as 165, as low as a dollar, because OCs are awesome like that. Tyler Black is a very intriguing name. Tons of steals in 2023 last year. Between AA and AAA, stole 55 bags. He had five homers and three steals, hitting .303 in 25 games at AAA to start the season. And he's already hitting, he's got four hits in his first five games, two doubles, one steal. 35% K rate is concerning. What's your thoughts on Tyler Black? Out of the three big time hitters that were discussed this week, he was my favorite, but I wasn't really in love with any of them.
I agree with that. So we kind of mentioned my stat. Not conundrum, but how things are going with my teams. And I probably need power more in my fab leagues, at least on a couple of the teams. And he has more of a steel profile, Black does, which is kind of paradoxical when he's a third baseman. So you have to have the right build. I mean, it's kind of like having Michael Garcia, but you're planning that out when you're drafting Garcia. This is a fab pickup, so you have to make sure that it fits. And I did not come close to that level of fab for my bids for Black. Also, too, with the Brewers, like, I got bit by Oliver Dunn. I'm not saying Oliver Dunn's the same prospect as Tyler Black. I think Black's much better, but they traded for Joey Ortiz. They traded Corbin Burns for Joey Ortiz, and Ortiz has sat, like, massive stretches after playing for massive stretches. I just don't trust them with their third baseman, or I don't know what the thing is with their third baseman. But also, too, Yelich is hopefully coming back soon. Garrett Mitchell comes back, and so when Yelich is back and Mitchell – that means someone has a DH, probably Yelich. That means Hoskins goes to first, where Black has been playing. And then, so Black will go to third probably, but they have Ortiz. I mean, they could send Dunn down, but then he's like a platoon player. He's already projected to be a platoon player, Black.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's like I said before, I'd rather in this one scenario, break the bank on Scott for that impact pitcher versus someone who could be a platoon player and maybe down in like a couple weeks, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Didn't really fit what I needed.
No, it's totally fair. He's playing first base and DH, but pretty much sitting versus lefties. He's sitting on Monday night as they're facing Cole Reagans. Probably not a bad day to get a day off, honestly, if Cole Reagans on the mound. But, yeah, it seems like that's kind of the formula they have in place. Like it's almost like he's platooning a DH with Gary Sanchez. That's kind of what it feels like. You mentioned if Yelich comes back and Mitchell comes back and the conundrum elsewhere. There's a lot of moving parts that could lead to Black going back to AAA pretty quickly. So I was very concerned with that with you as well. Joey Loperfido, 206 leagues, as high as 230, as low as a dollar. He hit safely in his first three games, nothing in the last two games. He has four hits so far, one run, two RBIs, 44% K rate to start things out. Showcased tons of power in the minor leagues. But at least on the bright side, he's playing pretty much every day. That's a start, but I was still worried about him because it just takes Chaz McCormick coming back or something and Loperfido's back out of the way. But I don't know. What was your thoughts on Joey?
Kind of the same thing as Black. I just didn't really want to bid what I would have to get him, Loperfido. And I mean, he has great minor league numbers. He was a 25-25 guy last year across three levels. So that's pretty impressive. But yeah, like you pointed out, the high strikeout rate, he hadn't really been doing too much. I think he's projected to platoon on the Astros as well. like Black is. So it's just, I don't know, it's just another rookie hitter that kind of has me weary of dropping that much fab on him.
Yep, I'm with you there. All right, I hinted at this earlier on the show. Daniel Hudson was the fourth most added player this week. 172 leagues, as high as 211, as low as a buck. On Sunday morning, Evan Phillips went on the IL for 15 days with a hamstring injury. They're saying it's not even quite a grade one. They're hoping it's just a minimal 15. Time will tell. Soft tissue injuries are never easy. So on paper, Daniel Hudson appears to be the guy. He's got one save on the air, seven holds. He's kind of been that late inning target for the Dodgers. They did activate Blake Treinen on Sunday to take Evan Phillips' spot on the roster. What were your thoughts on adding Daniel Hudson this week?
I wasn't really in the closer market, so I didn't even think about adding Hudson anywhere. But just be cautious if you did add Hudson, because the Dodgers don't like having a set closer. I think I mentioned with you during the offseason that last year Phillips didn't even get half the save opportunities last year, and he was basically the closer the whole year for the Dodgers. It's kind of ironic. Hudson's last two appearances are blown saves. One on Tuesday, one on Friday. So he's probably the guy who would get the most chances, but I would not spend $211 on Daniel Hudson right now. Even though if I was desperate, I would definitely be in maybe the 50s. But I mean, that's my 15 team brain. I'm sure it's a little bit different in a OC, which try even less. So yeah, I'd be out on Hudson if I needed a closer probably.
Yeah, in an OC, I would have been in the $30 to $40 range. But similar to you, I wasn't really on the market for closers, especially a 2 to 3 week rental in Hudson. And the biggest thing, like you mentioned, I wouldn't be shocked if three or four different guys get saves while Phillips is out. Like, that's just the reality of the situation when it comes to the Dodgers. So I wasn't that excited. Could prove me wrong. Kirby Yates proved me wrong already. So anything's possible. I still like Kirby Yates a lot more than Daniel Hudson. That's not really the best comp, but you get my point on that one.
And Phillips should only be out for maybe the minimum stay. It's a pretty mild strain, I think they said.
Yeah, so I'm hoping it's not even that. That's why I wasn't like, yeah, go spend your money on Hudson. I'll go pay for somebody else right now. See what happens. One guy I did not pay for was John Means. He was added in 150 leagues, as high as 323, as low as $3. He went into Great American Small Park. Seven shutout innings with eight strikeouts. That's great. The Reds also kind of suck, so you got that going for you. John Means' rehab was not good. I thought he was going to get shelled against the Reds, so I'll give him a hat tip. He did well, but what were your thoughts on Means? Because I could see throwing a few shekels at him, but that 323 bit is a bit exciting.
I want to say Means was already rostered in my main events going into yesterday, so I didn't have a chance to add him. I did get him in my OLAC, though, a few weeks ago. But I like you said, I didn't start him against the Reds. I wasn't going to risk that, even though that team's made a comeback. It can't afford to make any mistakes. But the one thing that's kind of wild looking at his underlying numbers, his swinging strike rate was 17.6%, which Ks were an issue for Means last year when he came back from his injury. So he's had a lot of time to recover. Like, he was healed and they slow played his start to the season. You would have thought he would have pitched out of spring training, but they wanted to rest him up or just bring him along really slowly. And so far it seems to have worked. And you hear people talk about it, but they basically made those changes for John Means, I think, to the ballpark, because lefty pitcher, those righty bats can just crush him all day. And I could see him being a pretty on par with the impact of Scott, maybe, because Means has been successful before. I mean, he won't have the K's as Scott. I mean, if he keeps pitching with that swing strike rate, he will. But I don't think you can project that going forward. That's 18 is pretty high. Maybe he's more like a 10 or 11 probably, but definitely a good start to this year for Means. And I don't know if I'd play him every time out. I would still be cautious of who he's facing, but definitely a good ad if you're able to get him, I think.
Yeah, this week he's got Arizona. Next week he's got Seattle. Not the worst starts in the world. He just scares me. He really scares me.
I'm actually sitting him versus Arizona. So last 2 weeks they have a 153 WRC plus versus lefties. So
there you go. There you go. Yeah, it's a rough spot. So I was all for, if people want to go get John Means, go for it. But there's a lot of if you're gonna spend that much money, you're gonna start him every start. That's the way I look at it. And he's not a guy I'm starting every start. So
that's fair.
Very cautious in that regard. Tyler Nevin, Oakland Athletics, added in 110 leagues, as high as 48, as low as a dollar. Nevin He's cooled off three straight games without a hit, but was on fire, like a 10 or 11 game hitting streak. He's still hitting 289 with four home runs on the season, hitting second every day since Zach Geloff went on the IL for the A's. He's got the multi-position eligibility. His third base outfield should gain first base pretty soon, because he's playing there pretty much every day with Ryan Noda sitting down the AAA. What was your thoughts on Tyler Nevin? He feels more like a 15-team play than a 12 per se, but I could see the appeal similar to like we talked about Josh Smith earlier. Third base is tough to find a body that you can trust right now, so I could see a little interest there, but what's your thoughts on Tyler Nevin?
No, I agree with you saying a 15 is over 12. I actually did stream Tyler Nevin. Well, I added him this week in one of my main events. Actually, I'm playing. He's kind of my Soler replacement now that Jake Berger's back, so I kind of worked out on that. Actually, no, I think I still started Soler on that team. It's another one I sat Soler. I forget. But, yeah, I was in on Nevin. I think I won him from Dom, the bullpen guru, nice, by like a dollar. And he messaged me, and I was saying how I was upset that – so last week I needed a third baseman because I've been waiting for Berger to get back. And I prioritized Senzel over Nevin on my bid list. And then I think Nevin had two homers or three homers. I'm like, oh, of course he did. But, yeah, I think he's kind of – the last couple of games have cooled his Statcast page a little bit. But for someone like in a 15, he still has above average power metrics according to Statcast. So – and, like, the third base outfield's really nice. And if he does get first base, like you're saying, that's even better. So he'll have a lot of eligibility for those, like, deep NFBC leagues. I remember when he was up getting called up with the Orioles, he kind of flopped there, but who knows what he'll do in Oakland. I mean, it's a big park. It's better than being in Baltimore, though, that's for sure. And then, like you mentioned, the lineup spot's really nice, too. So, like, he's playing every day, and he has a decent matchup versus the Rangers starting today. They have
Heaney.
They got Heaney. Owen White is projected, maybe. They have
I think that's a good one.
I think Jack Leiter. So I started Jack Leiter somewhere, but he's projected to fill in. And then there's someone else who isn't that good.
Michael Lorenzen.
So it's Demon could feast in these next 3 days because they have a double.
And then he goes to Wednesday. Colorado for three.
Is that this week also?
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is Colorado for three.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's it. Oh no, I think it's shows us Seattle on roster.
I'm looking at it right now. Oh, Texas goes there. Sorry, I'm an idiot. I was looking at Texas. Yeah, they're at Seattle. You're right. Woo, Miller, Castillo. Now, that's tricky.
Hopefully, I'll be able to sit him for those games. But he's just like I needed a backup third baseman anyway, so now that Berger's back, I might just hold on to Nevin. But, I like these four games, and he's been hot, so I figured why not.
Yep, I'm with you. I was targeting him where I needed help at the corners as well. Ben Lively, formerly known as Blake Lively, if you've listened to my shows long enough, he's earned his full name, Ben, maybe even Benjamin again. Depends on what he prefers. But Ben Lively added in 98 leagues, $65 the high, $1 the low. I've been talking him up for a few weeks now. Went out six innings, one earned five Ks against the Angels this past week. Five or more Ks in all four starts, two earned runs or less in all four starts, at least five innings in three out of the four. Been very, very effective. Might be a little smokes and mirrory, but overall I'm pretty pumped on what we're seeing from Ben Lively. So what are you seeing with Mr. Lively, who's definitely a 12-team viable guy now, especially when you get a matchup, I believe, versus Chicago White Sox this week? Yes, he got Chicago on Wednesday, so that goes a big, big way.
Well, he's got a great name. I'll start up by saying that. I said this 2 weeks ago, but it's always funny seeing the guys who lag behind in the 12s versus the 15s. So, like, Lively's been gone forever in main events. Which is fine. It's understandable. I mean, it's a deeper player pool. It's just funny to see, like, it always catches up. And, like you mentioned, the smoke and mirrors, which I kind of agree with. So his swing strike rate last 2 weeks, Lively is 9.9%, which is okay, a little bit below average probably. His K rate is 26.2%, so he's kind of getting lucky, it seems like, with the K rate. The CSW is only 26% in that time, so he's probably a little outperforming what his K rate should be. Also, he's a high left on base percentage, but, I mean, like, there's so many injuries, and it's hard to fill a decent staff, so I get especially the stream for the White Sox. So I would have done the same if I had the opportunity to add him, I think.
Yep, that was all about the one. I was recommending him over a ton of the two-start options this week. Like, give me the one start against the White Sox with Lively over a bunch of the two-start options this week. A few more here. Josh Rojas was added at 94 leagues, as high as 68, as low as a dollar. Rojas had a hot streak last year, then it went away. Curious to see what happens this year, because so far he's hitting 360 with three homers, three stolen bases. Great plate discipline metrics, 12.6% walk, 13.8% K. and leading off more often than not for the Seattle Mariners right now. So, well, again, another third baseman if you're looking for one. So what's your thoughts on Mr. Josh Rojas?
He's definitely a matchup play, especially in 12s. So he's facing four righties to start the week against the Twins. So that's he's going to hit a leadoff every day like you're alluding to. I think it was Rob D's pod. He was pointing out, I forget which one it was, but Rojas' sprint speed has actually declined. So he was always like a steals first guy for me. I actually have him in two DCs, and his sprint speed's 40th percentile now, which is kind of surprising. I guess it's been going down every year. But yeah, he's a great fill-in. Like without the injury to Crawford, he would be hitting ninth and platooning. So he's, especially in a 12, that's not very viable. But I think he scooped up in all the 15s. And there's a lot of red, just not really in the power department on his StatCast page. It's just like the exit velocity is kind of low. The barrel rate's slightly above average and the hard hit's below average. So he's just doing it through a good eye. He has a high K rate, a nice low or a low K rate, a high walk rate. Only off by like a percent, which is really great actually for the year. Yeah, so I think while he's batting leadoff in front of J-Rod, and I mean that lineup's gonna get hot eventually, I think. So as long as he's hitting leadoff, I like Rojas when he has a righty heavy matchup.
Yep, I'm with you on that. I've always been one to ride Rojas while he's hot in the right situation. So definitely here. We're gonna skip Trevor McGill. It's just one of those that people should have been doing this a while ago, and they're catching up with him and paying a lot of money for him. I want to ask about Winciel Perez of the Detroit Tigers. He's picked up in 87 leagues, as high as 86, as low as a dollar. He's pretty much the everyday center fielder now, which said bye-bye Parker Meadows is how this one goes. He's hitting 302 with three homers and two steals. He was kind of a prospect-y guy for the Tigers, but been quite productive. We saw last year between single-A, double-A, and triple-A, 26 stolen bases, 9 home runs, pretty good batting average. So what are your thoughts on Winciel Perez when we saw Fab this week?
He was a target of mine. I think I got him in two main events. So, yeah, I was big on scooping him up. The power speed that he's shown so far in the majors has been nice. And he's a switch hitter, so he's not going to platoon. He's batting third for the Tigers. Unfortunately, I sat him because they have a three-game week, and he's sick right now, so he's sitting tonight. Yep. So I figured to get a few more games from other players. But looking forward to plug him in on the weekend, hopefully. And hopefully he's not like Akil Badu, where he gets hot and then kind of flames out, because that was never a fun ride last couple of years with Badu. But yeah, I like Perez. He's a much cheaper rookie option than the other guys we mentioned earlier.
100%. I was much more interested in Perez than pretty much all of them, as you mentioned. Speaking of all of them, I will mention the next one. We'll skip Max Kepler. He should have been rostered already. People slacked on that one. Jordan Beck picked up in 84 leagues, as high as 256. As low as a dollar, Colorado's and Coors all week long for six games, which is big. But Beck has three singles in his first six games. He played every day, which was good. I'll say that much. Hitting 143 with a near 53% strikeout rate. I was not interested in Jordan Beck, but apparently other people were. So what were your thoughts on Beck this week?
I had him in my bid list, but I did not come close to the price. It's kind of the same thing. I think he was third on my rung of my ladder for those rookie ads. Yeah, I saw the 11 strikeouts, and when I looked, it was 18 at bats. So now he's improving the K rate slightly. But yeah, like I don't know, it's like another Rockies player. They screwed over Goodman and Bouchard, so I don't know. But they just don't know what to do with their players, and I didn't feel like wasting a lot of Fab on someone like that, especially when he's been striking out so much so early.
Yep, strikeouts and the fact that what they did to Goodman, as you mentioned, I said, nope, you're on your own, Colorado. Have fun with that one. I'll catch you all on the flip side. All right, Ben, let's recap our Fab moves from the week. We'll go 15s, and if you have any 12s, we'll do 15s first. And whenever you're ready, go for it.
Okay. All right, so in my first main event, it was a little bit light this week. Scott was not available in this one, unfortunately, even though I had the money saved up where I could have spent on him. But I got, you'll like this, Mike Yastrzemski. I dropped Ryan Feltner. $18, run up of seven. This is where I got Nevin. I dropped Senzel. I alluded to a 14, run up of 13. So that's why I got the DM from Dom. Sorry, Dom.
Nice.
And then I added Colin Ray as a streamer for the week, holding my nose. Dropped our boy Rottery. Ended up being a good stream last week. $8, run up of six. So I had a little bit of the gut with me this week in that league. Main event two, this is where I added my first team, added Wenzel Perez. I dropped Mark Leiter, so I couldn't do the three Cubs relievers for a second week. So I had to pick between who I was going to drop, and I don't know. I held on to Alzolay just because I don't know. Like, I feel like he's more of who they'd want to be as the closer if they don't want Neris eventually. Something that they don't make a trade, but so I figured Leiter's getting. He's like the eighth inning guy. Like the two inning guy, so I figured I could drop Leiter. I mean, he could be kind of cheap to add back if I made a mistake, but hopefully it's not a mistake. But this was a great bid. I was happy with this. I had 34 with a run up of 33, so another $1 nice. Difference. Then I streamed Sandoval, Patrick Sandoval, which could also be like a plug your nose, don't look situation. $14 run up of 12. I dropped Matt Waldron, who did not have a good two step last week. Then I added Quintana, dropped Feltner, $8, no runner up. And then I added Yastrzemski again. I dropped Jeff McNeil finally. I just can't take McNeil. Yeah, $8 run up of nothing. So I got Yastrzemski on two mains. Hopefully he does well in Coors. And then main number three is where I got Scott. So this was I tweeted this out. I was very happy with this. So I bid 344 on Scott. I had it like 356 at one point. I lowered it. Run up of 336. So I was off by $8. So I was pretty happy with that. So I got Scott. I dropped Rottery in this league. Which I wish I could have kept Rottery, but like we were kind of saying before, I don't know if I think he's going to get sent down after this Dodgers start. Yeah. He's going to get creamed and then sent to AAA.
Kind of what it feels like.
Yeah. Then I also got Wenzel Perez here, dropped Darryl Hernandez. He's on the A's. 34 again, run up of 18. So not terrible, but not as good as the other one. Also on this team, I added Josh Young. I'm kind of getting healthy on this main and I need hitting stats so I can hopefully hold on to Young for a couple weeks. Dropped Joe Boyle, $18 run up of 8, so that was pretty good. I learned from spending $100 with no runner up that one time. Then I also added Slade Ticone, dropped Feltner, 6 run up of 3, so not starting Slade. I just wanted some pitching depth, and I think he has some interesting underlying numbers. The last one for 15 is my Olak. So Zach Neto had been dropped. I added him. I dropped Blaze Alexander, 74 to 55, so that was pretty good.
Nice.
Kyle Gibson dropped Chase Silseth, who's went on the 60-day IL. He's going to be out for a while, 24-13. Then another stream is Tyler Alexander, dropped Brian Feltner, 14-1. Alexander gets the White Sox and the Yankees, both who haven't been doing too great against lefties, so hopefully they stay that way. And that was it for my 15s.
All right, Bloomfields checks in. You dropped Ryan Feltner. No loyalty, Ben?
Ryan, we discussed this. You knew it was happening.
Yeah, and even Ben and I talked about it off air. It's like, yeah, in about 3 weeks, we'll probably be back on the Ryan Feltner train when the matchups are right. But it's pretty ugly for the next few outings.
San Fran next week. Fire him back up, Ryan.
Yep. Get back to the Giants. All right, my Olak, my 15-teamer here. I got Will Brennan, dropped Blaze Alexander, 3-0. Added Trevor Williams, dropped Hunter Goodman, 2-0. I got Williams now for two reasons. It's 15s. He's been serviceable. I don't really want him this week. This week, I believe he faces the Dodgers, if I'm right. No, he faces Baltimore this week. But next week, he's got at the Chicago White Sox, at Philly could be tricky. But nice little two-step next week. Figured he cost a lot more. Wasn't a ton I wanted to spend up for on this week. So just got a cheap Trevor Williams looking ahead on that one. My MEQ, I got Michael Massey, dropped Yariel Rodriguez, 8-0. Got Mike Tauchman, dropped Ryan Weathers. I did drop him there. We talked about him earlier. 6-3. So those two small moves in my MEQ again. And then just for fun, for some listeners, Bubba and the Bloom auction one. Added Shane Boz off the waiver wire, dropped Rotary. 42-17. Boz should be back maybe this week, most likely next week. Frankie Montas dropped Pete Crow Armstrong, 22-13. Added Jorge Mateo, dropped Daniel Hudson. That's how much I like him. 6-0. Added Whit Merrifield, dropped Curtis Meade, 6-0, and then Meade got sent down today, so that was fun. And then auction two, added Cooper Criswell, like in 15s, I think he's going to be streamable with the Red Sox, dropped Yariel Rodriguez, 4-0, added Gavin Sheets, dropped Rottery, 4-0, added Tim Anderson, dropped Hunter Goodman, 3-0, because I needed a shortstop. So those were my 15s. Did you have any 12s?
Yeah, so I'll run down my It's my daily league, so it's not like a fab period. So I added Cano earlier in the week. I lost Pete Fairbanks on this team, and I also had Kopech. So in this transaction, I dropped Kopech for Cano. I still have Cano for now, but I might have to drop him soon. It looks like Kimbrel's going to be okay. Yep. I actually added Tyler Black when he got called up. I dropped Brendan Donovan. I've since dropped Tyler Black when Bradish came off the IL. Then I also had Alzolay. I added him when he was dropped. I added Jason Adam, though. So I have the Rays closer again for now. Hopefully he can stick around for a little bit. Then I added this morning, I added Richie Palacios for the White Sox series. I'm like, oh, it's a great, awful pitching. And then, of course, he's hitting because Lowe's back. So then I dropped – actually, I dropped Sal Frelick for that ad, and then I switched and I added Lamont Wade for Palacios later in the afternoon. So there's a lot of churning and burning in that one.
Yep, that makes a ton of sense. My 12s, I have three OCs. First OC, I added – okay, I took a chance here because I was curious, corner infield. I grabbed Brett Beatty, who was on the waiver wire. He's been actually hitting much better. I dropped Alex Kirilloff because he's basically average at best. It's a very weird stat line for Alex Kirilloff. 9-1. So I thought I wasn't going to be close to high enough on Beatty. Apparently I was. I added Zach Neto, dropped Blaze Alexander. Your 15 had, like, was it $75 you said on him?
On who? Like that.
Zach Neto.
I bid 75, run up a 50-something.
Yeah. So I did in my OC. I had Zach Neto, dropped Blaze Alexander. Same scenario as you. I got him for $6 with no runner-up bid. Welcome to the OC. That's why when you said it, I get stuck in my head. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm pretty sure I have that same move somewhere. I added Kyle Gibson for his two-step this week. Gibson's actually been good. 6 innings or more in 3 straight. 1 run or less in all 3. And his strikeout's at least 5Ks. Like, he's been very serviceable. Decent matchups this week. Dropped Yariel Rodriguez 6-3. And then I grabbed Brian Ramos of the White Sox prospect. Dropped Hunter Goodman 3-0. Ramos played on Sunday, got a knock. He's a nice prospect back. Curious to see what they do with him. He started on Monday, so we'll see. OC2s where things began to get fun for me. I added Kyle Bradish for $122 with a runner-up of 121. That made me feel oh so good on that nice one. I love Bradish. It's like the only league I didn't have him stashed in, and I got him anyways. I added Max Kepler, dropped Hunter Goodman. This is why OCs are nuts. $13 with no runner-up on Max Kepler, who's been phenomenal. Trevor Larnach dropped MJ Melendez 8-0. Ben Lively dropped Aaron Civale 4-0. Like, I had 3-0 bids, but at least I got the Kyle Bradish one, right? Like, holy crap. OCs are amazing. And then here's where it got really annoying. OC3, Eloy Jimenez dropped Blaze Alexander 112 to no runner-up bid on Eloy Jimenez. Like, how is there no runner-up bid on Eloy Jimenez? I literally freaked out. I freaked out and started searching everywhere. Did I miss something? Did he die? Like, are we not playing this year? Because then I also got Andy Páez in this league. Dropped MJ Melendez 112, runner-up of 87. That made more sense to me. Eloy Jimenez for 112 with no runner-up is, like, I don't regret bidding 112 at all. The fact there's just no runner-up is mind-boggling to me. And then I grabbed Frankie Montas, who's coming off the IL for a two-step this week, dropped Yariel Rodriguez 6-0. So I was really pumped to get Eloy, Páez, and Montas this week. Just the pricing was bonkers. Just stuff there. Just crazy.
Your league should be ashamed of not bidding on Eloy.
Yeah, that one just shocked me. Like, I'm so bad and nervous about bidding. I'm like, I'll never bid high enough, all this stuff. And to see no one bid at all, it's like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, what? Like, just
there's no way you could have known that, though. Like,
no. That's why I'm saying I'm not mad I bid the 112. I'm just more mad like no one bid after me. Because like, when you looked on the player page for the Fab page, he was at the top of the page. You couldn't miss him. If you're putting Fab in for the week, you couldn't miss his name. It was the very first. But him and Páez were the first two. I saw both of them and my eyes lit up. I'm like, oh, I'm bidding on both these guys. Like, to me, they're game changer picks for the rest of the season if they stay healthy compared to streaming Tyler Black or something. So, like, I was baffled.
That's a good point, though, that you brought up. So, like, when I do my Fab, I try to remember more now to just sort by the roster shift percentage, because usually I go by, like, innings pitched or Ks for pitchers, and then I look at, like, at bats or hitters, and I want to do what you just did more. I mean, it's going to hit more in an OC, of course, in the main event, but, like, for anyone listening, like, it's a good thing to do is to make sure that no one big was dropped, and even, like, reviewing last night's Fab moves, like, see who was dropped. I try to do that after it runs, see, okay, who was added, then also see who was dropped, so you can try to get that ball rolling if someone like Eloy does get dropped, you know, for the next week.
I was just shocked, because I remember, like, you mentioned Scott and Jeff earlier, the RotoWire show, I think it was last week or the week before even. I think it might have been last week. Jeff mentioned he spent a lot of money to pick up Eloy. Like, he's willing to take the gamble. Dude's got 4 homers in his last 13 games. He's always been able to hit when healthy. Like, and I know he could be hurt tomorrow. I'm very aware of that. But he's healthy right now, and I'm going to take a chance on a bat like that. And see, he even stole a base. He has a stolen base, Ben. Like that,
I know. I got my one team.
It's nuts. All right, let's talk some listener questions here. Just a tongue-in-cheek one. The Guild says, first time, long time. Should there be an asterisk placed on teams that cashed and won Christian Scott on the illegal wire? Thanks, fellas. If you know, you know, is all I'm going to say on that one. Curlin has one for us here. Early fab regrets. Who's the guy you didn't get that you wish you did? Why did you fade them, and did you learn or take anything from it? We'll start there, and then he's got a worst ad. So who's the one you regret not getting?
There's a couple probably. So I'm looking at my one main event. Joe Adell would have been nice, I think, but he's kind of cooled off. I think I bid on Adell. I just wasn't in the right price range. Got scared maybe. But also too, so like Taj Bradley was available in a couple leagues, and I got in on Taj and the DC we did together. It was like a late thing. I'm like, I like this range of like Lodolo, Taj, all these young second year starters. And then Taj got hurt, so I only drafted him in the one league, but he was available. And then like he went for 250 something in my one main event the other week. So I could have got him for cheap, but it's a stash though. So it's kind of hard. And then I guess the other two I'll mention, like Abreu and now Páez. I was scared off by Páez's strikeout rate, kind of like we talked about with Jordan Beck. But it's the Dodgers, so they have like their magic powder that they everything works out for them. Yeah, so like guys like that. I mean, there aren't a lot, but did you ask about the regret for an ad yet, or you want to?
We'll do that next.
I'm done.
Yeah, mine. The one that stands out to most to me, and it's partially because, like we said earlier, I'm not in the market for saves, but I should have been more interested in Kirby Yates. I kind of wrote that one off. He's been really good, and that could change. It's so quick. But for me, it's Kirby Yates. In fact, the five saves, a win, and ratios are good. Like, he just looks phenomenal on the mound. That's one that probably stands out, the kind of game changer. Instead of, you know, I went for Ginkle that week, a lot cheaper, so that's nice. Not going to deny that. Like, for the price point, I got a lot out of Ginkle, got a lot out of him. But I could have paid more and probably have Yates for the entire season. That's the cost, the benefit analysis in theory behind this all. So probably Kirby Yates for me. All right. So who's your worst ad? Basing this on price, price and production, basically.
Well, kind of like with your Eloy conversation, my worst ad so far has been when I bid 100 plus on Josh Jung with no runner up. I mean, it could end up working, but it's a massive overspend. But in terms of like someone who I added that I shouldn't have added, it was probably Oliver Dunn, I would say. Like I kind of alluded to how the Brewers don't like their third baseman. They just like having a carousel. Hopefully Black's not the last of is like not continuing that trend, but yeah, I wasted some money on Dunn and then kind of Blaze. I think I got Blaze in two leagues, Dunn in one, and it was like we knew going in with Blaze that there was a short side platoon risk. It was just kind of tough because of their schedule at the time. Even when Jace Peterson got DFA'd, they didn't really play Blaze full time. So it's one of those rookies that you think might be something and they end up being nothing. So
yeah, Blaze I'm not too mad about because like I avoided the Victor Scotts of the world and some of those things. I didn't even get interested in him because as we talked about even on Prospects Today, that's not my style for prospects. But I bid everywhere for Hunter Goodman, like anywhere from 20 to 30 bucks. Got dropped the next week, so that stung. That was just like a free donation to the pot. And those 20 to 30 bucks could be real nice in September. So that one stings quite a bit because I had optimism in the Rockies, so it's my fault completely on that scenario. But Oliver Dunn, I was in on that with you as well. But again, not super expensive, but still in on him. So not ideal, but yeah. I think the Goodman one, that and maybe even Yariel Rodriguez. I was really in on Yariel. Oh, yeah. Never really got it going. Now he's got the back issue. And like I think he's super talented, but they're just not going to utilize him the right way, it feels like. So those would be two that stand out to me so far early in the season. Aaron K. asks a follow-up. Should Rob Silver and this is to the Guilds. Should Rob Silver and Enos Arias be beaten with some kind of noodle for not adding Scott after he dropped last week? After week one, I dropped them and added them back myself week two for a buck. well done Aaron.
I wish I could spend a dollar on him.
Yeah, no doubt. Michael Cicchini, avid listener of the show, says, okay, I have to share with somebody a pod question. I can't bring myself to start him this week in a 12 with solid other options. What about you? He's talking about Christian Scott, and he got him for 118 bucks with a runner-up of 113. So that's pretty solid stuff there. We kind of hinted at it. You said you would start him against the Braves, right?
Well, it's a 15. I think in a 12, I'd probably want to sit. Yeah, I would. I mean, it's, I think the time passed, unfortunately. But in a 12, I would have tried sitting, Scott.
Yep, I'm with you there. Aaron K has another question. Would you rather have $113 Matt Chapman or a $92 Tyler Black? What if I told you the Tyler Black team has Young for a dollar added last week stashed? So basically, would you rather have Matt Chapman with, or would you have Tyler Black knowing Josh Young's coming back soon?
Well, the weird thing about Chapman, he has steals. I don't think that's sustainable, though. He's kind of like the crappy version of Young, Chapman is. So I guess I'd rather have Black, assuming you need steals.
I'd take the Black side and hope Young comes back healthy. That's what I'm with, because Chapman's never really done it for me, and I just don't see, he looks lost right now, so it looks bad. It could fix, but he looks lost at the moment.
Yeah, you would know than me. I haven't seen anything, Matt Chapman. I don't have him anywhere or anything.
Very, very lost out there. But Ted says, when is it time to give up on Jackson Churio in redraft leagues? It obviously depends on the size and format of your league, but if it's a shallow league, you can probably move on. You could probably move on to something else. If it's, I'd say at least 10 team for sure. 12s, I'd try to bench him for now, but I could see a path to moving on in 12s as well.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's Uncle Ted?
No, I don't know. No, it's not Uncle Ted. It's somebody else.
I would have said drop him before the season starts because I didn't want to draft Jackson Churio. But, I mean, if you take away his average, it's not an awful start. He's had 4 homers, 6 steals. Has he slowed down? Because I haven't really – let me look at his weekly loss. So he went 3-for-12, 3-for-21 week 5. That's not good. He had a good week 6. We didn't really play as much, only 13 at-bats.
I'm guessing he's probably going to start platooning and with all these guys that keep calling up.
And he's a right-handed hitter, so it would be short side of anything. Like we mentioned, Mitchell might be – well, how long was Mitchell out for? I don't know. But with Yelich's back, you never know. It's definitely getting crowded in Milwaukee. They have a lot of young guys there. Well, actually, kind of related. Wyatt Langford got dropped in one of my main events. So, if he's getting dropped, I guess you could drop Churio in something shallower.
That's what I'm thinking. Is Langford? I agree with the job, especially in 12s, 15s. You know, that's tough. But if he's out for a month, hamstring, a setback's easy. He was already struggling. Who's to say he doesn't go to AAA and stick for a while? Like, there's a million scenarios with Wyatt Langford right now. So I could see the drop there.
Yeah, Churio's got a 35 Ks and 105 at bats, so that's not very good. I mean, he's 20, so what do you expect? But that's why I didn't want to draft him. You're asking for him to be perfect off the bat, and that's not going to happen probably.
Yep, I'm with you. And then Taylor Johnson says, in a 14-team league, is Savali someone to hold on to and wait and see, or is he more of a streamer rest of season? To me, he's a streamer rest of season. I dropped him in 12s. I could see the reason to hold him in 14s and 15s just because of the player pool depth. I get that. But to me, he's a stream. He was on our list. The K to walk rate with the ERA is like a 6-something ERA, but the XFIP was like in the 4s. He's just been a disaster overall, though, and he's been crushing ratios on your team. What's your thoughts on Aaron Savali? Because there was a lot of optimism entering the season in Tampa Bay.
He's actually on my 12-team keeper league team. And I still have him, but I dropped a hitter when I added Kyle Bradish, and I've been trying to trade a starter for a hitter. I could just drop Savali, actually, because he's probably my worst starter right now. But I was so I looked at his Fangraphs when I was thinking about this earlier, and so his left on base percentage, Savali's, is 58.7% on the year. So he's definitely gotten unlucky. His xERA is 3.67. His xFIP is 3.44. The FIP is the high one. It's 4.33 because he has a kind of an elevated homer per nine, 1.72. In a 14, it's almost like the main event. I would try to keep Savali and hopefully just start him in good matchups until his luck turns around. Hopefully, if it was a 12, I'm considering dropping him in my 12, but if in a 14, it's like a 15, I would probably keep him just because of it's the Rays and pitching's hard to come by right now.
Yep. Nope. That's understandable. I could see deeper formats, shallower replacement value, but in 12s, I'm out on Savali at this point in time, but
I did see.
What was that?
Pick and choose. So I definitely, but I kept him. I think I decided to keep him because he gets the White Sox on Wednesday. So I want to see how he does. I'm going to play him there and see how he does.
Yeah, he has a good start there. Kirlin was trying to talk me off the ledge for that start. I'm like, let him deal. You guys can all thank me later for dropping him. That's fine. Like, I can't do it anymore. Not with not with the options on the table. So, like, I added Frankie Montas, I think, when I dropped Savali. Like, give me two starts of Frankie and see where that goes type scenario. We'll play those games. But all right, Ben, we're going to wrap it up there. Another episode in the books. Why don't you remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on?
I'm doing my weekly streamer or pitching, starting pitching streamer and like short-term ad article. I think I've done 5 editions now. And yeah, just doing that every week and filling in here whenever you ask me to come on. So
awesome.
Thanks as always.
I appreciate it as always. We'll do it again here in the next few weeks probably because, you know, stuff happens, so we'll make it happen. But everybody, make sure you're following Ben on Twitter at breaking_Ben_T. I'm at BDintric, and until next time, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 670. Catch y'all later.